Before we get started with this episode, I want to talk about the Texas Woodworking Festival happening on September 4th, 2021. If you're anywhere near Texas, you need to be checking this out. So what is the Texas Woodworking Festival? Well, it can be best described as a mix of a beer festival and a woodworking-themed farmer's market. They're bringing together local woodworking organizations, content creators, furniture makers, and tool manufacturers for a day of food, drinks, and all things woodworking. Please visit TexasWoodworkingFestival.com. There you'll find information about tickets, additional information about the schedule, and all the exhibitors and vendors. Look forward to seeing you there. Hi, I'm Kyle Barton, and on this 360th episode of the MWA podcast, Sean Wisniewski, Mark Hicks, and myself visit with Evan Birding, an outstanding designer, woodworker, and chairmaker. Welcome to the show, Evan.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Well, good, good. Well, we're real excited to have you on, and I can't wait to talk to you. But before we do that, let's dip our toes in what's going on in the woodworking news. First off, Woodpeckers has another one-time tool. I think they might have had this before, but I'm not sure, but it's a modular bar gauge system. So it's basically pinch rods that they've aluminized, anodized, and it looks pretty slick. It's got a they have these steel rods that you can screw together to make your pinch rods longer or shorter. They have some nice brass tips you can put on. I believe Lee Valley has something kind of similar. Anyway, it's pretty neat, pretty unique looking thing. The only problem is I think it's maybe a little bit pricey if you buy the full kit. They do sell all this stuff separately. For instance, the little bar gauge bodies are like $60. That's kind of in range with, some out there. I've seen some, you know, around the $40 mark and stuff like that. So, you know, if you were buying the stuff separately, it's not too bad. But I mean, you know, for the whole thing and the sustainer case and all that, you're talking $370. So
yeah, the bar gauge bodies, which are basically the only really the thing that you need to make a set of pinch rods.
Yeah,
they're $60 for a pair. Crucible has them for $48.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus shipping, you know, so it's just,
yeah. And I
you
think
know,
Legal
now,
has some too, you can buy.
They're a little more, traditional looking, I think,
yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't understand why.
I mean, you can do roughly the same thing with two toothpicks and tape, right? I mean, I don't want to oversimplify
skewers.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Toothpicks aren't long enough, but this kind of thing's been out for a long, 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 long time. I don't know that you need to make a bulletproof version of it because it's not something that's used
often.
Collectors.
I think this is, you know, it's a collector's tool.
It is. I see the case and what it reminds me most of, and I know like just the bars do that thing, but there's for stair installment and the nuances of say a curved stairwell to cut the tread. I've used the tool that had rotating platens on the edges that you could stretch out so you would not only get your distance but the angle that you needed to cut edge to edge, you know, because if it was some twisted weirdness or just not square or whatever, those kind of things are out there. There's plenty.
Yeah.
There's aluminum versions, there's wooden versions, there's just brass, you know, pinchers, you know, for wooden sticks, you know, there's all sorts of weird stuff out there. I'm like definitely collectors or just, yeah, you know, if you are the type of guy that wants to buy once and know that it's going to be good for your grandkids, this for sure will be because you're never going to use it.
Well, I mean, so like to be clear, pinch rods themselves are very useful.
Mm-hmm.
I completely understand the use and need for that tool. I just don't understand like why you need this complicated set with all these parts and
right.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of relative dimensioning.
Yeah, me too.
I just don't see,
why. You can buy trammel points. You can add trammel points on.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the accessories. But
a
stick with two holes in it is pretty good as a trammel.
Mm-hmm.
which is what I use. It even has measurements on it already. So, but yeah, mm-hmm. it's I don't know, sometimes feels a little silly in the woodworking world.
Yeah, yeah, but that's why I put it on there. You know, it's kind of like, it's kind of, you know, Woodpeckers comes out with some good stuff, but I think we play it pretty well down the middle. They have some hits. Mm-hmm. They have some ones that just leave you scratching your head, and this is one of the scratching your head tools.
Well, you know, I mean, I'd like to know what they get compared to their other one-time tools, of which I have a few. Mm-hmm. None were probably over $100 because I'm relatively cheap when I decide to buy something like that. But like, I've got the Greg Polini little square. When they first brought it out, it's like the little version, 4 or 6 inch. You know that's a great little tool. I've used it all the time.
Yeah, you know? Yeah,
it's super convenient. Again, something like this, like it, the price point is way up there. I can't see them moving a lot of them, which is maybe why they make it expensive, because if they only sell a few, they're gonna get something. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I can see that.
Because, you know, what they're known for, right, is precision machining. This is rot.
The opposite. Yeah.
It's the
antithesis of what that stands for. You know?
Exactly.
It's all about
exactly.
Showing one piece to another and getting it done.
Right. If you consider that, you know, Woodpeckers is, you have a wall of red, because that's what their T-squares are and all their other tools. The red is their color. The red is what they've done work on. This has like 20% anything of a color. Everything else is knurled gold, brass, and steel or some aluminum. You know, it's really minimalist as far as what appears to be what they could have done. They probably purchased a lot of these pieces and just assemble them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does Incra make? Or sorry, does Woodpeckers make Incra, or are they just a dealer?
I've heard that they make it. They make some of the stuff, their gold anodized aluminum stuff that Incra has. I've heard mm-hmm. that they make some of that for Incra.
Okay, so it's sort of a partnership supplier.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at least that was years ago when I heard that. So I don't know if that's
still the case or not. What's changed hands or what?
Okay. Just curious.
But yeah, so. You know, that's one of the things. But, you know, like I said, I think Lee Valley has something similar, because I bought it not for pinch rods, but I had another jig idea that didn't pan out. And so I ended up returning it back to Lee Valley. But, I didn't, you know, I got some homemade pinch rods basically that I've done. And I like my homemade better than the Lee Valley ones. And it used basically the same concept of using these round rods. So. Anyway.
Yeah, this is a bar gauge heads is what they're listed under. They're plastic, brass.
Yeah. Yep. That's the ones I have that have the wooden one, but they also had one that was all metal.
Ah,
yeah. Okay. That had different tips you could put on the ends of the rods and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yep. And Rockler has a 3-in-1 bar gauge with wooden rods, aluminum, you know, pinch points mm-hmm. for $40.
Yep.
So,
all right.
It's well, okay. But to be clear, we love Woodpecker.
We love
Woodpecker. We just don't always love everything they bring out.
Yeah.
Evan, you got a pile of red stuff in your shop or?
Yeah. Nope. Not a one.
Not a one.
I have two or three, but I don't use them hardly ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Polini is easily the most used. I've got the tiny little 90-degree square for like checking chisels. You know, mm-hmm. so that's only when I'm messing around with that kind of stuff. But yeah, pretty minimal though. You know.
Yeah. I have some of their stuff. I have their router table, so you know that's something. And it's a real, real nice router table, that's for sure. So, but anyway, now I want to introduce you to our new podcast sponsor, Woodpeckers.
Our new former podcast sponsor.
Oops. All righty. Well, moving right along. Boy, that was a long discussion on pinch rods.
inversely proportionate to the value of the
exactly.
System.
Exactly. Well, Lost Art Press has a couple of blog posts I wanted to point out, and that's on making wedges. So it's like a three-part blog post. So they got three different guys. Chris, and then Klaus and Rudy, the chair guys, the chair chat guys. So each of them did a blog post on how they make wedges for chairs. So, you know, when you actually put a tenon into a round hole. A lot of times those are back wedged. And so they show different methods, both machine and hand tool methods to make these wedges. So I thought it was pretty interesting. You know, I make a lot of wedges myself. I got a little box with them all in there, but I tend to use a bandsaw. But yeah, there's some good techniques there. So anyway,
Most recently I saw somebody taking, I forget who it was, but they just took a small piece of wood, a thin, you know, wedge, not wedge shaped yet, but about the dimensions they needed, and just held them with pliers against a belt sander on one side, held on the other side, refined a little wedge into it, banged it in, does the job.
Well, there are some chair makers that make a long wedge. It's real long, and they'll use the tip and then cut it off and then
rejoint
the point and then move on to the next.
That was Rudy's method too. He makes his not really long, like, it, you know, twice as long as they need to be, and then uses them a few times.
Yeah. Is that an effort to just make, you know, do the work to make the stock the widest all at once that you know you'll need, and then just kind of use, and then, I mean, kind of like sharpening a pencil. I mean, that idea that you've got more than you need.
Yeah,
you
know, and sometimes it's easier to hit because you got a long piece of wood tapping into the wedge instead of a short little wedge trying to tap into. So, yeah.
Makes sense.
I never have tried that method, but
if it starts to dive to one side or the other, you got a little more leverage to straighten it back out.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. So then I'm moving right along. We've pointed out Petrograde, this Russian company that seems to be good at copying people's work. And last up, I guess I should have asked you before we started the show if you had any issues with this, Mark. But
no, I don't. They don't use.
They don't use the.
There's no. Let me see. I'm gonna look through the pictures here and make sure. I didn't notice the hardware that I'm. You know, Pete's hardware that I sell on there.
Yeah,
right. I did actually got an idea from them. I might steal from them. I don't see any reason not
what,
to do
the,
that.
The way they do the seat.
Yep. I was like, there's something there.
Yeah.
That might be useful.
Adjustable seat, yeah. Because mine, I tend to just put a clamp behind it.
Yeah.
But
you do, you know. So I originally had a wedge that held the seat in place. Mm-hmm. And I got some feedback from Jeff Lefkowitz. He's like, we never, you know, the wedge is useless because we're moving forward and back. And, you know, we're all around. He's like, you know, why don't you just put some sandpaper under the seat? And I was like, well, that's pretty simple. I can do that. So. And it's easy to replace for anybody that's, you know, you can just buy a roll of adhesive sandpaper and stick it on there. But I've been wanting to build in some kind of way to lock the seat, but not in a way that's a pain in the butt to move. Mm-hmm. I know that.
Yeah, because Brian Boggs on his has that little ratcheting thing.
Yeah, he's got a really interesting solution to that problem. And I've had some different ideas that kind of played on that. I don't want to just... you know, blindly copy it. It's not cool. Pretograde. And, but you know, something out there to just kind of make that a little simpler process, but we'll see. Maybe Pete will come up with something.
Yeah. Well, it looks like it's pretty much Pete's design right out of the book.
Did Pete put a seat lock like that on there? Cause everything else certainly looks the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this looks like it's somebody's personal shave horse that this guy's like, well, I'll make them, you know, and here's a picture of the first one that I made.
Yeah, it could
be
because
we can sell it.
I've been checking it for the past week or so, and every time I get on it, it always says reserved, comma,
out of
stock.
Yeah, I think it's just a made-to-order thing.
Probably.
Two five-star ratings. I wonder what, there's no reviews to go with them. It's you can't click on it, so.
I can't read it.
It'd be in Russian anyways. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true, but... yeah, but I thought it was kind of interesting. Yeah, because I first saw this when they posted it on Instagram, and I believe they have like steel dowels for the adjustment mechanism.
Yeah, that's steel teeth.
Yeah, it's not like your.
It's the way I used to do it.
Yeah, I think it's the way you used to do it. Yeah.
Well,
so
cool. I guess have at it. I don't want to ship one to Russia. So no. That's kind of where all this stuff boils down to is like,
yeah I don't know what
they have a market over there that's hard for us to serve. So
yeah,
I know Pete would love to get a commission out of the design, some sort of royalty or something, but you know, it's kind of hard to enforce that sort of thing. So
yeah, so you know, they're hacking our computers and hacking our
probably not Petrograd.
No, probably not them. Yeah. Not that we know of, anyway. So, well, let's move on to our Patreon shout-out. So,
absolutely. I want to give a big thanks, we do, as always, to our Patreon supporters today. We're going to give a shout-out to John Marine. Maybe he's a Marine. But thank you, John, for helping us out and supporting us there. If you also, dear listener, would like to support the MWA podcast, go to patreon.com/MWA podcast.
Fantastic.
Thanks, John.
So let's move on to what's in the shop. Mark, what are you working on?
Well, the Shave Horses have finally left the building. And
They're going to Russia?
No. Yes, I'm selling them on
Better.
I am stacking up parts for kits for the workbench class. So the next round will start in the middle of September. And I'm hoping, you know, well, I'm planning on getting them all shipped out by the end of August. So I've just about to open up registration, but it'll be open by the time this airs. Shoot, we may even be starting the class. I don't know. But yeah, if you're just finding out about it now and you want to know if there's any spots, send me an email or check my website. So,
okay. This is your video class, right?
Yeah, it's the remote class. So it's a combination of recorded video, live video, you know, with the team. It's a cohort. So there's a group of people that all do it together. Mm-hmm. And we meet once a week as an official class meeting. And then once a week, you get access to my open shop. So I basically sit around for 2 hours and answer questions or provide demos or troubleshoot problems with people. So
Fantastic. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And how what's the cost on that?
I'd have to look it up. I think it's like $4,500.
Okay. All right.
And that, cool. You know, that includes basically all the materials for the bench, the Benchcrafted M series hardware, tail vise and leg vise. And then there are a bunch of upgrades and add-ons and things like that that I offer for people if they want to make, you know, the accessories easier or simpler. The basic kit, you know, ready to ship, is 4,500. It's on my site. I haven't looked at that. Mm-hmm. I need to go back and revisit that. So,
okay, cool.
Yeah.
So Sean, what are you working on?
Nothing, man. It's hot. I know it might not be Texas hot, but it's hot.
Is your bathroom done?
I still got to do the threshold and caulk, I think is the last bit, but otherwise it's very usable.
And you can do that tonight after we finish recording.
I could. You're right. But no, that's just been something just dragging feet on to go get, because it was a click laminate floor, mm-hmm. and it sat on top of the old linoleum floor. So I got to make sure that what I get is a thickness that's agreeable to not only let the door close, but also cover the gap between that and the hardwood of the hallway. So that's a bit of a tricky little thing, but other than that, no, it's I almost got stuck in a tornado. Not really. Over the weekend, we were up at a tournament about an hour and a half north of here, and just hanging out, in the evening, in a mall, and all of a sudden, loudspeakers came over, and the Charlie Brown teacher voice kind of said, "Wah wah wah," out, "Wah wah wah wah," mall, "Wah wah wah," leave. And I'm like, what's going on? And we just see people rummaging towards doorways, raining like cats and dogs, and tried to leave through one door. And they're like, no, you can't leave this door. We went, what? So there's an active tornado warning in the county. I'm like, oh, great. And we're stuck
in
a mall.
Is that,
Yeah. I don't know if that's the best place I want to be. I ran in flip flops across a rain soaked parking lot to go get my car. And, pick up the people that were with us, and then we sat in a Mexican restaurant and had dinner during that tornado warning. And it was
like you do, yeah.
Eventful, yeah, like you do. Thankfully, it didn't do any of that rain for the 5 hours we were outside watching sports, which was just hot and sweltering. But otherwise, but no, yeah, really not much, unfortunately. I need to find something to do. I need to finish the bathroom. That's probably the next thing I absolutely have to do because it needs to be done. That was a rush to do before the graduation party and then kind of dragged after.
You need to build a workbench, Sean.
Mark, I do. You know what? Because what was I doing on there? Oh, it was for the stuff I had to do for our bees. And I was, you know, I had to, you know, plane a groove, you know, around the box basically to put a quarter inch sheet in. My table, my bench, if you can just call it that, is a door on sawhorses, like so many of us, right? And I haven't used it like that in a while, and I've got a shooting board that I kind of clamp onto it so I can have something to leverage against. And I was rocking crap all over the place because it's so light and it just moves everywhere. No, I couldn't wax up or sharpen that blade enough to make it smooth enough to not move everything. And it's irritating as hell. But yes, you're right. I need to build a proper bench. I won't lie. I'm also cheap. Who did I just talked to somebody who said, oh, they've got this old barn that they can't use. And I said, can I come take some like just giant timbers, please? Like I'll just come and I'll be safe and I'll take out what I can. So if I could get some big old 6x6 something to make legs and put a slab on top of, I'd be super happy with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a possibility of the semi near future.
Mm-hmm. If you have any questions? You know,
I know the guy to ask. That's for sure. That is for sure. So, you know, with that boring story, Kyle, what do you have in your shop?
Well, I'm making jigs, of course. That's all I do anymore.
New but or for orders?
For orders. For orders. Okay. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
A good problem to have.
Yeah. By the time this posts, I should have filled all the orders I currently have at this point in time. So. Anyway, so that means I may still be working on new orders. But anyway, so that's going. I did have to raise the price on my spindle drilling guide just because of, like everything, prices are going up. Mm-hmm. And that jig's mainly hardware, all hardware. So a couple of my suppliers raised their prices on a couple of things. So it's like, okay, so hopefully it's just a short-term thing and I can lower the price back down, but we'll see. It only went up $15, but or $10, should I say. So not too bad.
And that's, I mean, I guess, you know, on that side, that's hardware, Mark. I don't know if what you use got pinched by the lumber hike or whatever. No. I was in Menards like a week or two ago, and their yard was full of lumber. Yeah. So the orders, I think, are starting to come in. Hopefully that is starting to diminish the supply demand worries and the, you know, supply chain getting back on its feet, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Silver Maple is never really, hasn't fluctuated that much.
Mm-hmm. Right. And
you know, it's,
I bought a bunch of it from Patrick Brennan when he moved from Houston back New York. He had enough for two Rubo workbenches. And I bought all that maple off of them at a good price. Thank you, Patrick. So, and my jigs are mainly made from maple. And then, you know, the boring jig, I do use some Baltic birch plywood, but I bought, you know, three or four sheets of that. And I'm still got two sitting in there. So I bought that a year ago. So I'm good. And those jigs don't take that much plywood in them anyway.
Right.
So, I'm pretty good as far as that goes. But, yeah, on the hardware side, you know, especially some of those aluminum extruded rails and stuff, all that stuff went up. And the company I'm buying it from, I'm actually having to buy it from another company because they actually have it in stock, hopefully. That'd be your world-famous McMaster car. But, if I bought directly from the company, they're looking at, you know, they were a month turnaround time. And I looked at them a couple of weeks ago and they're now like 6 weeks to 2 months turnaround time for orders.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and he's like, so anyway, but because it is a little bit cheaper buying direct than it is from McMaster Car. But hey, them's are the rules that we're playing by right now. So,
right.
But also, I got a digital rule for my table saw from
digital. So on the front.
Yeah, on the front. So it kind of replaces the rule that you have, and it's just like a, it's like a digital gauge. It's basically on top of the rule, you lay down this metal strip that I guess the chip in this little electronic unit can read, mm-hmm. and then on top of that, they have a metal rule that you affix so that you do have marks so you can get gross adjustments. Now, I haven't used it a bunch, but every time I have used it, it's been really accurate. It's really great. And yeah, you can make minute adjustments with it and then come back to those adjustments. And so I was fairly impressed. It's got it. I think I saw this. I want to give credit. I think it was Stumpy Nubs. One of his things, but the website is chipsfly.com, and I believe this is made by iGauging, and but I couldn't find it on iGauging's website, but I found it here, so
it's strange.
Now, I want to say if I had any complaints about it, it's instructions that come with it, because apparently they changed the manufacturing process. As far as the stuff that you have to stick down, apparently this little metal strip, and you got to stick that down, then you got to stick on top of that the metal rule. I think that used to all come together. Now they've separated it. So they put this little, you know, one page thing, but yeah, the instructions weren't the best. It also has some little gauge things on it. But anyway, it's fairly intuitive, so you can read between the lines and put it on. It took me like, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes to do it. So
it's not bad.
Does it re-zero quickly? Like, is it easy to zero it out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. One of the good things is you can also set it anywhere and you can do a direct, you can zero it at, let's say you had it at like 3.5 inches and you want it, for whatever operation you wanted that to be your zero, you can hit a button and that'll be your zero and it'll move from that point.
Yeah, so I've got
and then you hit the button again and it goes back to its default setting.
So is it moving your fence automatically?
No.
That sounds like
digital readout.
Digital readout. But I've been impressed.
So how do you micro adjust? I mean, how fine are the graduations?
The graduations, it does.
Is it read fractional?
Yeah. It does fractional. It does a decimal, inch decimal system, and metric.
So how many digits in the
inch? I think it's to the thousandths.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's to the thousandths. It might only be to the hundredths, but I think it's to the thousandths. I've been doing a lot of metric stuff, and I know the metric's down to two places past.
Yeah. Which is thousandths and
inches, basically. So. Yeah. So I think the inches to the thousandths, but yeah, it's really, really handy. So, so far so good. I'll report back if I ever take it off, but so far it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Good. I mean, that's a thing that, I mean, it's been out there for a long time, but yeah. I've always questioned the accuracy or the simplicity, you know, of it.
Necessity.
Yeah. But like your Mark, your question of, you know, how many digits. I mean, when is it, you realize that the difference between the 16th and an eighth is 0.1 or 0.625, right? Like in decimal. But, you know, when do you need the thousandth of an inch?
Yeah.
Well, you know, on a power tool. I get it. Yes, but you know, you're not exactly going to measure that with any other thing unless you're measuring with a micrometer.
I think it's all about getting back to that same exact measurement if you have to make a new part. And so, but what I was trying to get at there is like, how hard would it be to get the, you know, to how do you bump your fence a thousandth of an inch? You know.
So, at that point, you're like,
okay, I can be off by 5 thou, and it's not a big deal. So I'll take 3.505 instead of 3.50,
right?
And you know, be happy with it. So,
Yeah, you can bump it pretty accurately. You can also put up some magnets and have a little screw, and I've seen all kinds of things to do a micro adjust. So that's possible. Now, the primary reason I bought this, well, first of all, I never trust the rule on my table saw to begin with. I always put up a rule next to the fence and, you know, over to the blade on almost all my operations. But in doing these jigs, I'm always having to go back. 2 inches is one measurement I'm always having to go back to. So I wanted something that could enable me to get, you know, repeat that 2-inch adjustment without hardly any error. And also in making this new jig, I'm doing some metric stuff. So I'm making these little wooden risers, and one is 59 millimeters wide, and the other one is 54 millimeters wide, I believe. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, so this made it real easy to get metric on my table saw and be able to go back and forth to those adjustments. Or those measurements. So yeah,
I might look into this for my straight line rip saw, because the gauge on it is not right. Mm-hmm. It's off by a little bit, and then every time you change blades, if the teeth are a little bit wider, the gauge changes.
Yeah, so that's really easy
to slide the fence over, set it at zero out the gauge, and then go.
They have a fast way of doing it. They have a they recommend using a 1-2-3 block. So just put the 1-2-3 block between the blade and the fence, and then set it and recalibrate it at 2 inches.
I bought some of those on your recommendation.
Oh, good. Yeah,
I haven't used them yet, but they're there.
You'll find yourself, once you start using them, you'll find yourself using those things all the time. Two of them sit in my bench, and one of them sits on my table saw all the time just to have it.
I'll put one there.
There. But anyway, so that's what's going on with me. So, Evan, what are you working on in the shop?
Oh, I am working on a couple of chairs. excuse me. kind of wrapping up. There's been various projects kind of all waiting for knobs to show up and like trying to get other things started, but then jumping back to another piece and then kind of trying to coordinate. Got a couple of deliveries coming up, but my primary focus in terms of new work is are these two kind of like club chair, riff on a club chair sort of thing. Which is cool. It'll definitely be, it's a lot of upholstery. So that's kind of I've done upholstery chairs before, but it's more upholstered than any of those. So that's kind of cool.
Well, that's interesting. I was going to ask you about that. So do you do the upholstery yourself?
Yeah. No, and that's kind of another, there's only so many hours in the day, and certainly that's like a years long endeavor to get to the point where I would want to be before I started, doing my own upholstery. But it's funny. It's such a challenge. It's kind of that, like, when you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Sort of a thing. Cause I will talk to, Meredith and I have used, there's a guy, we're in North Carolina, and there's a guy in kind of outside of High Point, which is, a furniture hub here. Mm-hmm. And he had worked in the industry there for a long time and retired. And he and his wife, who's a seamstress, work out of their basement, 10 months of the year. And then they travel for a couple of months. Yeah. And they're great. And I've been able to kind of in the past, say, this is what I'm going for. What do you need on the side that I can't see? The only issue is he's like an hour away, a little more than that actually now. It's not always convenient to just go out there and sit with them for, an hour and kind of troubleshoot a thing, especially if I don't have a mock-up or a decent enough model. If we're working on drawings, it's I'm kind of, I feel like I'm imposing on, like, you know, what would you do if it was this and if I want this? But he's been patient. And so I'm using a new upholsterer, or actually that's not true. I've used him before, but a different upholsterer for this, this job. And he came by a couple weeks ago and I had a little model and we were able to kind of talk through some stuff because it's just such a mystery. It's like sometimes they're like, oh, yeah, you know, whatever is there, it'll be fine. And then other times they'll be like, oh, you need this little thing right here that I don't know how I'm supposed to know. But there's definitely a bit of there's a lot of presumption on their end that, like, oh, you know, just build the chair and I'll upholster it the way you want. And it's like, well, I know that's not true. You're saying that because every chair you get is made for upholstery or whatever. And I'm trying to like create this new thing and I don't know. Anyway, that was kind of another bit of a, you know, stepping or hurdle to clear before I can really get cranking on them. But I think everything's more or less sorted out. We'll find out, I guess, when it's all done. But yeah, it's fun. And then otherwise, yeah, kind of navigating finished pieces that are waiting for delivery and trying not to do any irreparable damage to anything that's just sitting around waiting.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, as the
shop
rash. Yeah, yeah. The aircraft industry called it hangar rash.
Yeah, got a nice ring to it.
Yeah, so, yeah, interesting. Well, that's interesting about their upholsterers, too. I've had a couple of things that I built that needed some upholstery work, and I kind of found the same thing. A guy that was in the business that had retired to Houston and was working out of his garage, basically doing jobs on the side. And he did a couple of jobs for me real good. But on the third job, I took him, you know, I gave him a deposit and all that. And, you know, 3 weeks go by and I hadn't heard from him. And the fourth week goes by and then I hear from him and he had a heart attack.
Oh, geez. Oh,
man. Yeah. And he's in the hospital and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, didn't have the heart saying, oh, I'm really sorry. Can you send me my deposit back? I didn't do that, but I was just like, okay, I guess, you know, that was $200 I lost or whatever. But he did recover and finished the job. So it took about 4 to 5 months before I got him done. But yeah,
that's pretty fast, actually. Recovering from a heart attack. So
anyways. Yeah.
Well, that's 100%.
After that, I go, I need to find a new guy, but I haven't had any upholstery work since then. So,
well, that's exactly what I'm kind of dealing with because, you know, the guy I mentioned is retired and he was going to use him and he literally, I was texting with him and he's like, I'm at the doctor's. I'll get back to you. And then like 5 minutes later, he was like, well, maybe like, let's pass on this one. And so I'm hoping he's all right. I didn't get any follow up, but you know, regardless, I was kind of looking around, and then this other guy who I'm using is also retired. But he again is doing the same thing. He's still, you know, taking side gigs. But to find a younger person who is willing to kind of like one knows has the chops, and then two is willing to kind of just sit with me because there was a guy who. A refinisher that I have just kind of befriended in the area who's been around for a while. I was asking him, and he's like, oh, yeah, there's this guy over here. Talked to him for a little bit, and kind of quickly that guy was like, I don't think I'm, you know, he's like, I'm pretty busy. I don't think I, you know, more or less I was interpreting it as I don't have the time to deal with, you know, some artsy-fartsy kid who wants to, like, build something new, like if you know what you want, like I'll get it done, but I'm not gonna troubleshoot it with you. So it's like, all right, well, there's a guy there's a guy, just as I'll put a plug in for this guy, because I was kind of talking with him and he was helpful, Straight Thread Company up in Madison, Wisconsin. His name is Matt. Geez, I hope it's Matt. We'll assume that it's Matt. You can edit this in post if I'm wrong, but he does some really beautiful upholstery work and really interesting. It's kind of that. It's really showing the craft of the upholsterer in the chairs or whatever that he's upholstering. He'll kind of leave a lot of work exposed, or the backs will, you know, you'll see the strapping and stuff instead of putting that cover plate or whatever you'd call it over top. But I was like, man, if that guy was around, I would 100% know who I'm working with. But
yeah,
that's, Madison's a little far away.
Yeah, just a tad. But yeah.
What about Maselli? Have you contacted him?
No.
Mark Maselli. I think it's Mark Maselli. He's like a, you know, old school upholsterer, does a lot of writing, you know, and teaching, and maybe there'd be an opportunity for some consultation, you know, like, you know, for his time, and
totally
he can guide you so that you can walk in with something to one of those busy guys and say, I need you to do this, and you can understand like the vocabulary,
right?
And they'll also the design language, you know, that they'll look at it and say, and just know what you want based on how you've built it.
Right, so, right. That's 100% right. And that that was more or less what I was kind of trying to get at with Matt, the guy from Straight Thread. But his kind of response to that was like, if you are not doing the upholstery, you know, you really do want to talk with the person doing it, because there's, you know, multiple ways of executing, and if they are more comfortable with X or Y and you give them A and B, then, you know, this or that. But I think that, you know, finding somebody who just says, lays that stuff out maybe and says, you could do it this way or you could do it that way, and either way you need this in this place and a little place to pull through the fabric and whatever, a groove here, you're good. So that's exactly right, because it's not, I mean, I did buy a book, and, you know, I'd be interested in taking some classes, mostly for that reason, to just kind of have like a good foundation of, you know, what all's happening behind the scenes, and then being able to do that and hand it off to somebody and let them pretty it up. But it's always something.
Yeah. Exactly. There's always
problems
something
for problems.
Well, let's start off by telling us a little bit how you decided to become a professional woodworker. What led you to this wonderful craft? Enriches beyond your wildest dreams.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that a North Bennett tool chest in the background on your website photo?
Yes, it is. Good eye. North Bennett was in there. Before that, in terms of like what led me kind of to go there, or ultimately decide to go there, it's pretty I was actually talking with a client where I'll be delivering these pieces, I hope this weekend. They had this really beautiful stone patio recently laid, and I was talking with them about that, and I was like, you know, stonework is actually how I kind of got interested in furniture work. I was living in Seattle, and I was working for a landscape construction company, kind of residential, did a lot of stone walls, stone patios, decks, stuff like that, in addition to, you know, irrigation systems and whatnot. But I really enjoyed stonework, and I, you know, was kind of, it was in that exploration period of, you know, your early 20s where you're like, oh, you know, working with my hands is fun, because I didn't grow up doing anything like that. Not really. And I looked at a community college and they had a furniture class, and I was like, oh, that's cool. I've always kind of been tuned into furniture, because my parents actually had, I grew up in Virginia, and they had a few pieces made by some local guys. And I always thought that was cool.
That's neat.
Yeah, one guy, Ernest Bryant, who nobody's ever heard of, but he's really pretty amazing. A lot of kind of folk, like what he likes to do is like these folk kind of art carvings. He's in like Czech Floyd, Virginia area. The other guy before he got really famous, I'm blanking on his name, he's in at the Renwick Gallery. He has that famous it's like a Chippendale side chair ball and claw where the ball is like rolling away and it's one of the claws is kind of reaching for it. Mm-hmm. And the splat kind of looks like it's looking. His name's on the tip of my tongue, but
I can't think of it either. I've seen it. I know the piece you're talking about. Though.
Pretty famous. But he, you know, such that furniture makers are famous. they had a couple of like a trestle table, very simple stuff before he had all that kind of fame. And I think they went back to him after that at some point. He's like, oh yeah, I've got, you know, a 5-year wait list and it costs 17 times more than it did before. So they only had a couple of things by him. But anyway, so that was kind of like, I think I was a little bit primed for it in a way. So took some classes out in Seattle at a community college, which is really great that they just had those there. And then I started cold calling people for a job. like in the furniture world, and a guy named Tom Stangland, who does Green and Green furniture, for whatever reason, was like, sure, I'll take a total noob. but it was great. Worked for him for not terribly long. It was probably less than a year. I think he was kind of scaling back a little bit, and I think I felt like I had maybe run my course there. I enjoyed it, but it was like I was renting space in another shop, a shared shop out there, and kind of felt like I was more interested in spending my time doing that and making money waiting tables, which is what I did. It was always a pretty serious hobby after that, initial start, and then kind of through my 20s, and then I lived abroad for a year. In South Africa, I was thinking I was going to kind of go the teaching route. And I taught English there. And then when I came back, I was just kind of, I guess, a little directionless and was building a lot of furniture just for like family and friends and stuff. And kind of that was where I was like, you know, I really like this. I think I'm decent at it. And maybe I should, you know, consider it more seriously as a profession. And that's when I applied to North Bennett. So I went there in 2012. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And graduated 2 years later. And that's where I met Meredith, my almost wife, who's supposed to have gotten married last year. And then, you know, the pandemic happened. Exactly. But
and now everybody's trying to get married right now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I went to 2 weekends in a row weddings just in the middle of July. Back. So yeah. It's doubling up, I guess. But anyway, I met Meredith there and we moved down here and have been having a crack at it ever since. So, and it's going well.
Well, cool.
Good area, I think.
When you were at North Bennett, was that there in their new building or the old building?
So we actually got both. We had a year in the old building and a year in the new building, which felt kind of special. Get a little bit of the old history and see the new face of it. But both. I mean, honestly, both facilities were pretty. You know, the older one was, I guess, more charming might be the word. It was great. But the new one is certainly not sterile by any means. It's an old, I don't want to say because I'm going to get it wrong. It's some sort of press or factory. You know, it's great windows and still right in the north end. But it was also a really kind of wonderful space to work in.
Yeah. I visited the old building back in the day. I had been around. Probably 2010, something like that. So 2010, 2011. Yeah. So I saw the old building and it was a neat place. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely pretty quirky, but very neat. Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, so tell us a little bit about, you know, your design philosophy and how you come up, because, and looking at your webpage and your gallery here, you have some traditional stuff and also some very contemporary stuff, but you can see a lot of influences from Shaker to, you got kind of a Chippendale type piece.
I guess there's a gamut there.
So it looks like you've run the gamut as far as what types of design. What do you like to build? What types? What would you classify your design style as?
I don't know that I have like a concise like straight answer for that. I mean, I think if I was at like a show, the default is kind of like there's a, you know, a bit of tradition or classic design forms and whatever that are given a little bit more of a modern sensibility. And I think that's accurate, but it's kind of hard to sum up because, you know, as commission based, there's a lot of you know, meeting the client's vision to a degree.
Well, I notice a lot of your chairs seem to speak with one voice.
I guess I think that's probably true. I think that you know, in the last couple of years, I think this is probably just the nature of how it goes when you're starting out, maybe in anything, is earlier work, you're really just doing what people want. They don't know what you can do. You don't have much of a portfolio. And so they're like, well, I want this. And you say, okay, I can do that. And then maybe you have a couple of good clients who you're like, I have this idea and I can, you know, I can draw it for you, but like, you're going to have to trust me to a degree, cause it's not exactly like what you're looking at. And so you kind of can build a little bit of a head of steam with what you want to do. And then as that head of steam gets a little bit, you know, whatever, more pressure, you have a little bit more say so in designs. And I do feel like in the last couple of years, more people are like, I like your style and I want something like this. It kind of has to go with this sort of thing that we have going on, but you know, we want it to be your voice. But yeah, chairs, I think in particular are pretty, I don't know. A lot of things have, everything can be designed in any sort of way, but chairs, right, it seems like lend themselves maybe most, I mean, they're most challenging in a way, but in another way, they can be pretty varied and still do what they're supposed to do. So you can kind of flesh out a little bit more of that personality there.
And I love a lot of your looks of, you know, flat work or chairs or whatnot, but the legs you put on furniture, you always have some sort of subtle curve or subtle shape in them. That's very nice. Very nice.
Well, thank you. I have a real aversion to just like the simple route. there's an aesthetic thing there. Like, you know, I get that. Or I acknowledge that, but I also think that for a commission-based, you know, maker of any kind, I'm not going to be able to compete with the companies that are banging out the stuff that's, you know, a lot more straight ahead. Nor do I want to. So making sure that if there's an opportunity, you know, and the client is down for it, and it makes sense in the, you know, the context of the whole, which is, that's something that I'm always kind of trying to keep in mind, making everything cohesive. But it's like, why wouldn't I? I have to take the time to make four legs, maybe doing whatever, a little detail or a little curve or something is not that much more work, and it will give it a lot more pop. And it's gonna hopefully catch more eyes than whatever. So yeah, I try to, you know, really think through those opportunities, even when it's not directly being asked for or anything, because it's always there.
Now you do Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, just kind of hopefully bridging this a little bit, like a couple of your side tables, there seems to be like a negative play with forms going on there. There's, you know, the phases site table, as it's named on your site. Like, you've got the circle above, the cutout below, the corner, you know, in there. Like, I'm not a design guy. But I see that there's a theme there. Like, in, like, you know, where did that pull from? I mean, maybe specifically.
Yeah. I think that was, so that one, really was, just sketching. You know, I tried to, if people ask for a, you know, a table to work in, say, between two chairs, which is where that one is, they, you know, there's like some height thing and a whatever function. And I more or less try to give, you know, I doodle around for a while and I try to give three strong contenders that I would want to build. Because if you give them one you don't want to build, that they will pick that. so, and I try to kind of go more like straight ahead, you know, whatever, something more traditional. We can do this little detail. It'll look like this. Maybe something a little bit more that, but multiplied by a couple. So if you've stripped off a lot of the ornamentation or curves or something, you know, add those in, and then maybe do one that's more contemporary or whatever. It's just whatever kind of flows to the top. And for whatever reason, that one kind of like showed up when I was sketching, and I did not think that they were going to go for it. But I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And yeah, it was very much this notion of, you know, well, it's a circular side table that they need, but, you know, what if it isn't? What if it's kind of incomplete? And kind of allow that tension to be kind of made more literal. And that, it's funny, because that's more or less, like, I don't really have anything else that I would say is that. No, that's not true. That Philadelphia table inspired.
Yeah, the Philadelphia that, looks like it. I don't know which came
exactly
first.
Exactly, they go together pretty well.
Yeah, the phases came first, and then the Philadelphia table I made for a show in Philadelphia, and sold it in Philadelphia, which is great. But it, yeah, that was very much the spawn of the former. But I forget what I was gonna say. but that general idea. Not necessarily like those two are kind of maybe more connected, but this notion of creating that tension, having a little bit of like a branching, kind of the like taking the notion of like what you expect the form to be, and then taking something away or pulling, like feeling like something is literally being pulled off of that. That's where the I can't remember what I named it. There's a hall table actually for those same clients. It's made out of Wenge and a Madrone burl, and there's kind of the sides kind of flare. It's almost like they're peeling off of the primary structure. Anyway, it's kind of a thing that I have found myself like unconsciously starting to you know, design this like in the sketch phase, do more with that kind of, I don't know, like a tension of like parts kind of being pulled apart and not in conflict with each other, but kind of acting as almost like a foil, where it's that tension is creating like interest in both of the parts more than anything would be, or either one would be without.
It's a really creative design. I mean, it's delicate in its form, but it has kind of like that. You know, imagery of something being separated but suspended above where it was separated from, and it's like really nice. It plays with your eyes in a couple different ways. It's really, really cool.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah. I think that is important. Having giving some like track or a line for your eye to kind of keep wanting to like figure out is what, you know, keeping the eye moving is, I guess, how designers talk about it. And it's like you look down here and you say, okay, I see how that relates up here. And then you're like, oh, wait, what's over this? And you just kind of keep tracing it. And you don't know that you're doing it, but that's what really gives so much life to a piece. Because if you can figure it out, and you know, at a glance, it's you know, it might be interesting the first time, but it's going to kind of resolve itself pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. It's cool testament to your design that you can have something that's kind of out there and creative, and then also you got your relatively contemporary, you know, or like Kyle's more, you know, he can recognize a couple more designs that, you know, these have a similar form, or, you know, you're touching on Shaker, or you're touching on those mm-hmm. other things. It's just the whole demonstrate what we're getting at is go to the website, look at what he's making, because it really is a testament to your breadth of design, which is very, very cool to see that you know, something that's not just kind of keyholed into one thing, or even like, I can't even tell that you've gone through like stages. There's just variation all over.
Well, I appreciate you saying that a lot. It is something that I think at some point it kind of dawned on me that like, oh, this, that's what I'm good at is not the like one, like, I think I'm a maybe better than average maker, but I'm not the fastest, you know, woodworker in the world. And I, you know, don't think my work is perfect on any level, including design, but I do think that kind of the versatility with hearing what a client is looking for and being able to have an opinion, I guess, my opinion within that, to be both, you know, personal, but also what they are looking for. And that, and it's more, I don't know, that's, I like that, you know, it's more fun for me to be able to say, okay, you know, it's going to be Shaker or whatever, and this is going to be real modern, and still for it to be, you know, it may not initially, I think, appear cohesive. And that actually worried me for a long time. I was like, people are going to go to my website and think I'm like a total spaz. Like, you know, it's not like, I don't know, you'll see some, and this isn't a knock at all, it's like some people are really good at a particular look, and in a lot of ways it's almost easier to identify like, oh, that's a so-and-so. And that was what I was worried about. I was like, nobody's ever going to be able to look at a thing and be like, oh, that's Evan. But I think, you know, I mean, who's doing that anyway? But I think if people kind of check out the website or whatever, kind of follow along with it, there is a through line, even when the initial forms don't necessarily suggest a commonality. But
well, I think it didn't surprise me to see the North Bennett Street tool chest in that photo after when I was looking through the pictures of the furniture, because you are, you know, you can nail these classic elements, design elements, and you know, the execution is really clear, and so you can see like, oh, okay, you know, the stringing and the inlay and the veneer work, you know, all that stuff jumps out as classical education, but it's applied in so many different ways. You know, it's a lot of fun to look through the webpage. The furniture is really interesting to look at.
Yeah, cool. And, thank you.
And I guess you touched on it early with the Philadelphia table, but is there a class in these schools about naming furniture?
Like, no, I feel like I'm totally sporadic with that.
Sometimes, you know, it makes sense. It's the Philadelphia side table. And other times, right. You know, I wonder, like, where do the names come from?
I know. I feel like I need to probably, like, go back into my website and just, like, clean it up. Because it's – a lot of them were client names, like the people who commissioned them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I would take their street name if, you know, I felt like they maybe didn't want their name to be whatever highlighted or is too specific or something. Okay. So their street names, the Philadelphia
town
was because I was like, well, I'm going to Philadelphia. So like I'm making this chair for the table for the Philadelphia show. So it's like totally, it's like whatever. So my sister is, mine and Meredith's our photographer. And mm-hmm. she is a photographer. So, but because she's my sister and because I pay her in, like, occasionally I build furniture for her as a trade, I'm not like at the top of her, you know, work queue. So it tends to be like, we'll do a photo before delivery and then, you know, a couple weeks later, month later, she'll do another one. And then like 6 months later, I'll get a dump of images. And then I'm like, okay, build up my courage to sit down and try to navigate how to work a website again and put everything up there. And so by the time I'm like, okay, third piece in, I'm like, all right, what am I going to call this? I guess it went to this person. And like, oh, they got two things. I don't want to name, you know, the table and the chair after them. So I'll name it the other thing. And it's like, yeah, it probably could use a little, I guess my answer is no. I did not get a class on how to furniture. And I probably should take that class.
Well, oh. I think if you just, you know, describe where the name comes from. Because it seems like most of them have an explanation.
Right.
And I just always wonder, you know, because sometimes you can see it, you know, it's
right.
There's a reference to music and they have a name like staccato chair, like with Jeff's.
Right.
Or yep. The toccato chair. You know, I get it. You know, the repetition and the thin beats and all that stuff. But other ones, you know, they're a little less obvious, and that adds interest to the story of the piece.
Yeah.
Do you often make second productions of a piece? I mean, is it pretty common for people to order a specific piece straight off the site?
It is not terribly common. I get kind of the Burke bed and kind of variations on that are I would say that is the most that I've gotten asked. I'm actually be building another one of those beds in a project or two. So my parents' neighbors commissioned the Fraser table that's on there, which is literally from the Fraser TV show. She was like this huge fan.
I hope it's not Gary Rogowski's work. He'll catch you.
I don't think it is. It's a because I had to do. I didn't have to. It's, you know, you can kind of see it, but I was trying to figure out what the story was. And it was there was some maker out in California who made it for the show. And I think he just like dropped out. Like, I don't think he builds furniture anymore. And there's definitely other people who have kind of riffed on it, but whatever. Yeah. So I did it, and it was really just more or less look and try to copy it proportionally and scale it to.
Yeah. Or maybe the guy, you know, got a call from the Fraser people and a client dropped out of his order for three shaker tables. And,
oh, look, Fraser, I've been looking for this table. You know, how much is it? I'm like, well, you know, I don't know. Give him a price and then never hear anything from him. It's like, okay, that's fine. You know, I typically, for stuff I don't really want to make, I'll maybe like inch the price up a touch and be like, if it sticks, fine, I'll do it. Yeah, a lot of people ask about that one, but I've only ever made the one. Actually, I have, that is also in the queue. I am going to be making another one of those, so I guess I shouldn't say that. But yeah, no, and oftentimes if people do ask for something, or they're like, you know, I really like this, but you know, maybe you could do it in this way, I'm like, I can also design you a new one. Like, it's not good on the business side of things, but like, I do have a kind of a little bit of a reluctance because, you know, more often than not, you know, at the end of a design, it's very hard to not look at a thing and be like, well, this could be tweaked a little bit, or this is wrong, you know, this whole area. And so, you know, people will be like, oh, you know, can we do this again? More often than not, I'm like, I could do that, or I can like make the amendments that I want to do, or we can explore other ideas. I do think that a lot of people don't get what, you know, when I say commission or, you know, custom furniture, it really is, you know, custom. I like doing new designs, and it definitely slows things down, but it does keep it interesting also. And so more often than not, if people really want it, I'll do it. But I'm kind of trying to be like, well, we could also, what if I did this, or, you know, whatever. So it's not, there's a handful that I have made. I've made the diplomat chairs like eight or 10 times. Mm-hmm. So people like those.
I know David Duyard.
Yeah.
Commented that, He loves your chair. It's the comfortablest chair in his house. So,
wow, that's saying something. I'm actually sitting in his chair, the one I traded him for that right now. So,
yeah, cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Yeah, that guy's a gent.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
He got the last. Yeah, I think that was the last Philip chair that I had. I think there were three of those. Always. It's always more tempting to try to come up with something new.
Well, fantastic. Well, what do you like building better, flat work or chairs and benches?
So I'm going to have to be a novice and ask, when you say flat work, are you talking tables and?
Yeah. Tables and dressers and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Gotcha. I think more chairs. I think there is something kind of inherently, I don't know, sexy about them. You know, you can kind of do a little bit more, like I was saying before, with a little bit more expression sometimes when you don't have to worry about, like, well, a table's always going to be right around 30 inches, or, you know, this box has to hold these drawers, so it's going to look like a cube, more or less. That said, variety is fun, and I do, there is a lot of love for, you know, those pieces like table, like dining tables or kitchen tables, especially, that, you know, are really going to get that kind of centerpiece, not because it is the centerpiece, but because it is a place where people are kind of like sitting around and having life. That's always kind of an appealing thing. So, but I think if I were to say design wise, yeah, I'm always going to want to build chairs. If there's a company out there that wants to hire me to just like figure out chairs and then sell them to them, I'd love to do that. Keep me on retainer.
Oh, we could be like Wagner and just number your stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I was going to ask you about your Wellborn chair. I know I asked you about upholstery, and I know this one looks like it was woven. So did you do that? Or
I did do that.
Wow. That's excellent.
That was, it was a lot of fun. And well, time out. I should also say, so I had four of those chairs. Well, there were two that were commissioned, and I built two more. I felt like I was very far behind. Four labor intensive chairs.
Looks like it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I don't know. I forget how many joints there are in that chair, but it's more than there needs to be ultimately. I was trying to, there's a caning, seat weaving, whatever place out in Asheville. It's kind of some Instagram buddies. And I was like, maybe trying to do what?
Is it the Guild, Seat Weavers Guild?
No, it's a Silver River Chair.
Salt River.
What'd you say, Salt?
Salt River, isn't it Salt River? I think I've followed them at one point.
I think it's Silver River.
Yeah, there's the Silver River Chairs. I follow them, yeah.
Okay, good.
I'm wrong, sorry.
Yeah, they do all the...
Well, there might be another one.
There's a lot of rivers.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't blame us. Yeah, and I was talking to them about potentially doing it, and it was, you know, it's going to be a little while, and I was like, screw it. I'm just going to, like, I've done a lot of caning, but this is different. That was, it's more like basket weaving, the Wellborn chairs. Mm-hmm. It's like round rods, and then what are they called? Half round or something flat round, you know, so... Whatever, it's a much stronger than cane for sure, yeah. And it's a lot more. You can kind of sculpt it in a way, which was what I wanted for that. But I really just kind of had to buy a book and watch some YouTube and hope for the best. But I was gonna say I got my mom to come down. She's a handy seamstress and kind of all sorts of likes to do stuff with her hands, and so she came down and helped me with the because so much of it's just repetitive, but so we sat around and watched a couple of movies one day and knocked them out, but that is a technique, that specific type of weaving, I forget what it's called, but I one day I would like to take some time and kind of explore some other potential with that stuff. I see a lot of cool opportunity there, but
yeah, that is a real cool chair. You know, it kind of follows the lines of some of your other chairs, but it kind of has a Asian inspired look to it, so to speak.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It looks comfy as all get out.
It really is. It's a very comfy chair. So that was commission based. They had these old wicker chairs they were from some like hotel or something that their family had gotten, and they were totally falling apart. And so I took one of them and basically not entirely, but basically was able to, reverse engineer the ergonomics of it. Mm-hmm. But I still wanted that kind of woven seat cradling. And then it's definitely one of those things that will be getting more comfortable as it kind of breaks in.
Right.
Because it's not stiff, but it's, it's firm for sure. It's funny that you say that about the Asian influence. I think I see that.
Bamboo.
Right. The rattan sort of.
Yeah.
Right. But a designer had gotten in touch recently. I need to follow up with her because there's some Japanese hotelier. I don't know what you call them. They're making a hotel in Hawaii, and they had asked about those chairs.
I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just have to build a few hundred.
Yeah. No, it was only like eight. I definitely was like, how much are you talking about? Or how many are you talking about? And how long
entire is this? Dining room? Yes.
Yeah, right. Exactly. but it'd be cool. I would. I don't know. They were really kind of one of those morale busters. Not in that like it at any point it was like going wrong. It was just like it just felt endless. And because all of that, not all of it, the legs, the arms, mm-hmm. All the intersections are like carved into the round mm-hmm. or shaped into the round. So
sculpted.
So
yeah, it like was... kind of like a birdcage chair,
right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yep. So it was that times whatever 50 or something per chair, and it was just like I felt like I was working all day, and then I'd like turn it over, and I'm like, this is like halfway done. But
oh yeah, that would be a lot of work.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh man.
Which is the work, like, honestly, that's work that I really,
yeah,
I like a lot. I like
yeah
files and rasps and spoke shaves and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But yeah, it was definitely pushing up on that ceiling of tolerance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. And that gives me even more respect for the chair. I figured it was a lot of that stuff was round and it was just,
yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I think that if I were say that commission came through, I think I would scratch my head for a bit and talk to some people about doing it that way or seeing where some opportunities for that are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like those back legs, I'm sure could be steam bent. I just don't, I've done steam bending in Windsor capacity, but not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You could probably steam bend those in the arms, maybe.
Yeah.
Talk to Tim Manny. He's got a bend.
Yep.
Like that and his ladder back that is really extreme like that. So
yeah, I did for the I didn't they're not on my website yet. I actually just got the photos back. I have a big dump of photos that are not on my website from the last 8 months. But I did four kitchen chairs that kind of have more of a not ladder back, but kind of, they're almost like, the Philip Morris, Sussex chair, I think is kind of what I looked at. It's like kind of a Victorian, spindly, I don't know. It's a sweet little chair. Anyway, but I recognize, I was like, I'm basically building, like a ladder back sort of a thing. And so I talked to Tim for a while, he was super, super helpful and 100%. I think I even he commented on this chair, on some Instagram post, and I was like, if I do these again, you and I are going to talk, because I need your professional guidance here.
Well, cool. Well, wow, we've almost covered all the topics that I had, and this is fantastic. Before we leave talking with you about what you're doing and stuff, tell us a little bit about your shop. Are you renting a place or something like that, or?
Yeah. Okay. So when we first got down here, Meredith and I, or the royal we, whichever fits best. we were in a shared shop in Chapel Hill, which was great because kind of just hit the ground running. But we were able to kind of build up, buy machinery as it came up and all that sort of stuff. And I was at a friend's like cookout one day and met his neighbor, who's a cabinet maker, and he was like in the process of buying a building in Durham, which is where we are now. And he was like, oh yeah, I might have some extra space for you. So that just timed out perfectly and is kind of an ideal setup. We have about 2,000 square feet. And it's like kind of a long, I think it's 25 feet wide by, 50 or 60, whatever makes 2,000 ish.
Yeah,
maybe less, maybe 40. No, got to be at least that. Anyway, So it's primarily the main part is the machine room, and then we have about a 20x20 bench room, and three phase, to the building already, and we had a lot of three phase machinery, and the guy who did the electrical, I kind of tried to help, but I think I was just probably getting in the way. He came back recently for something and he was like, oh, this place is a lot messier than the last time I was here. It's like, yeah, that's what 4 years I guess in the shop will do. But it's great. Mm-hmm. I really love it. There's a good mix of some pretty old, old iron, big Tanowitz bandsaw and big Yates American joiner and planer, and
cool.
Yeah, those are my favorite machines in the shop. They work amazingly, but just aesthetically, they're works of art, industrial art themselves. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's great. And then the rest of the building is a cabinet shop. So there's a big spray booth if we need to do that. They've got a big wide belt sander, and we're buddies with them all. So it's and it's like a mile and a half from our house. So we bike in and bring the dog.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty great. I've said more than once, I really... Unless we like found the ideal building to move into, I really hope to never have to leave.
Yes. Or your friends with the wide belt sander, you want to keep them around too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what's so great. He owns the building, and he it's his shop that's the majority of it. So he's like certainly invested in keeping it as a shop. Whereas there's a lot of buildings in Durham that are, other makers and have to move out because somebody's going to tear it down or the rent's going up crazy and it's going to turn into a condo or something. So, knock on wood, but for now I feel like we're pretty safe, but.
Now with both of y'all working in the shop, I mean, do y'all have like a system, like who gets a table saw, or who gets a bandsaw,
Yeah, it's pretty rare that it's an issue. Like once in a blue moon, we'll both be doing like milling. But it has yet to really be an issue. So I guess at that point we'll just arm wrestle and I'll hope for the best. But but I don't know. Meredith's been doing a lot more heavy lifting work than I have recently, so maybe I should not go with arm wrestling. But yeah, no, for whatever reason, our work is paced such that it's not usually a traffic jam.
All right. Well, fantastic. Well, what's next for you then?
Oh, in the like immediate sense or in the,
yeah, anything you want to pimp or, talk about?
I've got a good amount of work in the queue, so I've got some fun jobs coming up. Couple more chairs, desks, beds, all sorts of fun stuff. So keep an eye on the website or Instagram if you want. But I don't know. I think I try to, you know, always be having a part of my brain that's considering, like, you know, what else can I do for, you know, in the furniture world. But so Meredith has been doing some teaching, and I think that would be something fun to get into. But, you know, or the online, I think, Mark, you were talking about, like, the online classes that you kind of run. Yeah, stuff like that. I don't know exactly what it is, but something in that, I think, in that direction that might be nice I don't even know what you call it, just like a little maybe steady stream, or maybe not steady stream, but a little mix up in the year to go somewhere and teach, or just break with the commissions and do something that's more interactive ultimately.
I mean, it definitely definitely pays off on the interaction level. You know, you just people ask you questions that you would never ask yourself, and in answering them, you learn things that you would never have learned on your own. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
I believe that. Honestly, I was doing something at the shop today, and I was like, oh, I should probably peel out and go get ready for talking with you guys. And I was like, you know, I feel like I used to probably have a lot more like go-to answers for some questions, you know, whether it's like we were talking about design philosophy or something like that. But I was like, you know, I don't know if it's because, you know, the further you go, or the further I have gone with my, how I think about design or whatever, the kind of like more ambiguous it is. And it just feels like it's kind of a, you know, if it looks right, it's that's right, you know, rather than a top down, like it has to fall into these. So it's like, I don't really feel like I have an answer there, and we haven't been doing shows. So I don't have that, like, you know, when people come up to and ask you questions, you kind of, like you're saying, start talking, then you find out you do have ideas. But she was like, yeah, you know, I guess that'd be one thing that if we had an apprentice around or something that you could kind of, you have to explain yourself, and which we don't have to do anymore, or doesn't feel like we've been doing. So yeah, I believe that. And definitely, certainly, I think everybody's probably in the same boat somewhere in the middle of pandemic world. Just have forgotten how to kind of communicate like that in all ways, but certainly in the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you. Agree with you there. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So, well, let's move on to our fortnightly beer choices. Right. So I will start us out. I'm doing the Wow Factor by Eureka Heights. I think I'm just going down their list for each of our shows. but this is their Mandarina Pilsner. So it's a hoppy Pilsner with the little mandarin orange in there. So our mandarinan Bavaria hop, should I say. And it's got a little citrusy in there. So yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And not bad, 5.1 ABV, so pretty mild and very tasty. Very tasty. Good summer beer.
Wonderful.
So anyway, so Mark, what are you up to?
Well, I am sipping on the smallest little splash of Tawakero bourbon.
Oh, nice.
So that's a Texas grapevine. Well, I think they moved, but they started out in Grapevine.
Fine, yeah.
And my friend who came up to build the bed for his daughter introduced me to that bourbon a year or two ago. And it just showed up in our local bottle shop. Mm-hmm. So I was happy to find it, and I had to take a sip of it every once in a while.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, I've heard of them. I don't think I've tried it yet, but I'm going to have to now.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
My favorite Texas bourbon.
Oh, there you go. That reminds me that I have a bottle of bourbon upstairs that I haven't even cracked open yet. I need to
start sipping
on that.
Yeah, when I was in high school, probably junior high and high school, they had a startup winery there in Grapevine, Texas, and it was called Heine Wine. I don't know if they're still in operation. I haven't seen anything, but it was that you know, they had great bumper stickers. I remember that. I think they probably made more money selling bumper stickers and T-shirts. They did. Why?
Better at marketing than they are at winemaking.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. But I always remember that. Yeah. So, Sean, what are you drinking?
Just the old staple, plain old Miller Lite tonight. Just keeping it light, keeping it flavorless.
You want to pretend that you're drinking a beer.
Yeah, right. Basically. It's when you don't want to be drinking, but you're drinking anyway.
Yeah.
There you go.
That sounds like a problem.
John. Is this still leftovers from your graduation?
No. This is just the staple in the house.
This is the house.
Literally on every week's grocery list is Miller Lite. Okay. That's just the go-to. Evan, how about you? Anything more interesting than that?
There was a mix of a Wicked Weed brewery. We've got just a 12-pack mix, and this is the Appalachia. I can't tell if that must be an H. Appalachia Session IPA, which is nice. It's a lower alcohol content. What is it? Mm-hmm. 4.7. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I dig it.
Nice.
Yeah, it was just luck of the draw, but worked out all right. But cool. Yeah, Wicked Weed, they're always pretty solid.
Yeah, they're in Asheville, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard of them, but I don't know that they come up here. I think I probably had it last time I was in North Carolina, actually.
Yeah. You know,
I think I might have saw. You know, I go to this couple locations. Beer bistro, whatever, where they have, you know, like 99 different types of beers on tap. Uh-huh. And I think I've seen Wicked Weed there, but I don't know. I don't think I've had it, though, but I'll have to look for it next time I'm there. But I don't think I've been there in over a year.
Right.
Well, for good reason.
That would be it. Yeah. This is in Asheville. There's a couple of bigger breweries. There's like Sierra Nevada in Asheville, which is obviously not based there, but I wanted to make sure I wasn't embarrassing myself and somebody's saying, oh, it's a West Coast beer. That's just their, like, you know, satellite brewery or something.
Yeah, I think they have a couple of ones because I seem to remember I was in Colorado and they had a brewery there too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's much closer to the Sierra Nevada River. Yeah. If I know geography at all.
Yeah, I mean, still, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, that one's definitely based out there. But I don't know, anybody quote me on the Wicked Weed, but I'm pretty sure they're in Asheville.
I think that's when I discovered them. I was visiting Scott Meek, and he took me to their tasting room or their bar or something like that.
So, yeah. That'd be very cool.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, so, Evan, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
Well, you can go to my website, evanberding.com, B-E-R-D-I-N-G. I'm on Instagram, Evan Birding. I guess I'm the only Evan Birding, so all the stuff is easy.
Yes. Pretty good.
It's not the real Evan Birding, or?
Yeah, right.
Authentic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, if you see that, it's not me. So
yeah, it's a different, there you go.
Real Evan
Birding.
I'll stick with the fake Evan Birding. But but yeah, those are the places.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Fantastic. Mark, what about yourself?
Well, I'm at plate11.com. I'm Mark Builds It on Instagram, and I have a YouTube channel under Plate11 Woodworking. Kyle?
You can always find me at barton.kyle on Instagram or Kyle Barton on YouTube. Sean, what about yourself?
As usual, you can find me at SeanW78 on most every social media.
All right. So, do we have any reviews for this week?
We do. Yeah, we do. Fenley's View Farm from Instagram mentioned that they really enjoyed listening to Neil Brown's episode. So, that was a great use of Instagram there. If you've got a comment, we'd love to hear from you. You can put it on Apple Podcasts, but you can also hit our at MWA
underscore podcast.
Yeah. On Instagram. One of these days I'll learn that. So let me start over there. It's at MWA underscore podcast on Instagram, and leave a comment if you like the show, if you have a suggestion for a guest. if you want to complain, we'll hear those as well.
Absolutely.
And I really prefer to read the complaints on air. They're a lot more fun to read. So comments, questions, and corrections, feel free to reach out.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.